You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore, and today I am joined by Rob Hatch.
Hola.
No Lionel.
No, where is he? ¿Dónde está?
He's been detained, Lionel. Unfortunately, can't join us. I mean, he's not been detained at Her Majesty's pleasure or anything. He's not in prison. He just can't make it today. So you're a more than adequate stand-in, Rob.
I'll try to do my best. Sorry, Lionel, if I don't reach your high bar.
Well, I mean, we're throwing in the deep end here because this is day three of the Vuelta, stage three of the Vuelta. We've just watched it at the Rafa Cycle Club in Spitalfields.
It's
very nice.
Weather as well, isn't it, outside? Absolutely gorgeous in London.
It's beautiful, yeah. We got a free cake as well because it wasn't deemed to be looking good enough to sell.
I thought it's just because they saw you and you didn't have to go up to them and say, do you know who I am? They just brought it over ready for you.
It was a tart, actually. I asked if the same applied to the clothing, whether they had any clothing that didn't look good enough to sell, but sadly not. Anyway, we've had a nice afternoon here watching the Vuelta, lots of other people watching the Vuelta as well, and it was a really thrilling stage, and yet again, more beautiful scenery. We're going to chuck you right in at the deep end, Rob, because Lionel's job usually is the tail of the etapa. You're going to do that now.
We started in Galicia, in Marín, 176 kilometres all the way to Mirador de Ésaro. It's a climb that we went up in 2012, and it's the second time up for a stage finish, 30%, a real wall towards the end. 198 started, despite the injuries from the crash on Sunday. Warren Barguil did not finish, he had sinusitis, the first to climb off at this Vuelta. So on the stage, seven riders got away, had a gap of around 4 minutes, that grew to six, bordering on seven when Simon Pelo attacked his companions. Pelo looking for GPM points and looking for a contract too, as Yam Cycling are disbanding. He went on his own, and then he was caught with 22 kilometres to go. Alexandre Geniez, not dangerous to the overall general classification at 4 minutes and 57 seconds. Peter Seri with him as well at 1 minute and 19. He's just signed a new contract, so not worried about that. Popular rider, and both of them chased on and caught Pelo. He was caught with 22 kilometres to go. Pelo got back on the descent. Kwiatkowski, not wanted to hand over the red jersey, was in the lead, pushed on the descent, trying to put in the end Chris Froome in the right place for the final climb. Bad news for Astana because Miguel Angel, the Superman Lopez, he found his kryptonite and ended up on the ground in a crash. 8 kilometres to go. He lost a lot of time towards the end. 2.5 minute advantage for the leaders with 3 kilometres to go. Pulo was off the back with 1.2 kilometres to go. Genius dropped Seri 200 metres later, and with 1 minute of an advantage, 800 metres to go, Geniez pulled it on to pull a Française des Jeux' first Grand Tour win of the season. In the meantime, behind, all the favourites' action started up. Froome was in a great place at the bottom of the climb, but it was all about Movistar, who attacked. Fernandez doing a great job for both Valverde and for Quintana. Contador with them briefly as well before he was dropped. Esteban Chavez up there as well. In the end, Fernandez getting away on his own. Froome initially dropped but working his way back. Fernandez, he did a Pipo Pozzato, thought he'd won, celebrated across the line, didn't get the stage, but he did get the red jersey.
Yeah, that always embarrassing, that even when you do end up in the leader's jersey, it's embarrassing. Well, that was very good, Rob. Your pronunciation isn't as good as Lionel's, but, you know, it's not bad.
I'll get there. I'm working on it.
No, it was, we'll talk about the stage in a minute, because it was fascinating that that gap was just tumbling down. They had, you know, they had 3 minutes with about 5K to go, and that still might not have been enough, the way the road just reared up the last 1.8 kilometres. But I mentioned earlier, really stunning part of the world. The last couple of days we've been treated to a real visual treat. And as we were watching it, it's very green, very lush, very mountainous, very rocky as well. Lovely stone buildings, very colourful little villages, and obviously a spectacular coastline. It does look a little bit like the northwest of Scotland.
Interesting you say that, because Galicia, for those who don't know too much about it, and there's no reason to know too much about it because it's not a traditional holiday destination or anything like that. It's a very working class area of Spain, right on the northwest tip. They've got their own language, which is quite similar to Portuguese. They've got their own culture, and it's a Celtic culture. They consider themselves to be rather similar to the Scots and the Welsh, the Irish, the Bretons. If you can draw a diagonal line all the way up across the Bay of Biscay, I think, and it's a very similar culture. And you say that's reflected in the geography, the fact that they're seafaring people. Their own food is, well, octopus is the famous dish of Galicia. And if you listen to the music, it's a bit like listening to the Corrs or something like that. It's very, very unique, very different. And that is reflected, as you're saying, the stunning scenery, the geography, and the beaches look just idyllic, didn't they?
Beautiful white sandy beaches. And yeah, they've got in common with the northwest Scotland weather, hot and sunny. Beautiful, beautiful landscape and a really exciting stage, thanks to the terrain. It has created some fairly substantial gaps between some of the contenders, and you know, it's still very early in the race to talk about riders being out of it, but certainly there are riders like Stephen Kruiswijk, whose team Lotto NL Jumbo looked very aggressive going into that final climb. They looked like they were up for doing something, but Kruiswijk fell away and lost quite a significant amount of time. He's now 2:14 down overall. As far as Contador and Chris Froome are concerned, it was a tale of two strategies, wasn't it? Because Contador went with the early acceleration, which was really seemed to be pushed home by Movistar. Esteban Chavez, very impressive, I thought, in shadowing them. And you know, he's a guy who looks to be in very good form indeed. Movistar put distance between themselves and Froome, and then Valverde started to struggle a bit and dropped off a bit, and they seemed to wait for him. And again, Movistar seemed to, you know, they are very much Valverde's team, and he seems to be the favoured son yet again at this Vuelta. But it could be a bit like the 2013 Tour, when Valverde was the leader, Quintana was the man in much better form. You can't extrapolate too much from a climb like that. It's such a unique type of effort, places unique demands on the riders, so let's not read too much into it. But there was an opportunity there for Quintana to claim some time on Froome, which is what he never managed to do at the Tour. You know, he was on the back foot throughout at the Tour. Here was a chance for him to be on the front foot, but Movistar kind of eased up, and Fernandez, who'd been driving it, certainly eased up, paced Valverde back, and then attacked himself.
Yeah, you wonder about the communication in the Movistar ranks as well, especially Fernandez celebrating what he thought was the win when he came across the line. He's a 25-year-old from Murcia. He's a former winner of the Tour de l'Avenir, so he's obviously got promise. He only made his Grand Tour debut last year at the Giro d'Italia, though, and this is obviously the biggest moment in his career so far. But they came into this Tour of Spain with Valverde in the form of his life. And again, some people thinking, oh, he might not ride the Vuelta this year because he's already been at the Giro, at the Tour. He's got a podium at the Giro. He was fantastic at the Tour, good at the Olympic Games. And this was going to be Quintana's race. But they've waited for him again, as you say. And if you're a Movistar fan or a Spanish cycling fan, you'll be scratching your heads tonight and wondering, what on earth were we doing? Because Froome coming into this race saying, well, I'm not particularly going to be very strong in the first or even the second week. I'm going to have to wait to the third week and see where I am and hopefully maybe push on then. I'm a bit heavier. Of course, I've come off the Olympic Games. I've been at home trying to rest, trying to train. But it hasn't been going right in terms... It's not the same preparation as the Tour, let's say. It was never meant to be the same preparation as the Tour. And you should be thinking that this is the time for Movistar right now to put the nail into Froome's coffin early doors. Certainly as far as the first or second week is concerned. Put him out of the game until the third week, until he earns it and gets back and does well. And yeah, all right, Fernandez has taken the jersey, but Valverde is second at 7 seconds. Froome is only third at 11 seconds, and that is a very, very good day for Froome on a day when they really did distance him in the first part of the climb, but Froome did what he does best, which is work his way back on. And he ended up putting 28 seconds into Contador, which is another bad day for Tinkoff. So really a head-scratching day for Spanish fans.
It's very impressive the way that Froome paces himself on these climbs. We saw it a lot at the Vuelta last year, where you get a lot of steep climbs, and it does tend to be on steep climbs where managing the effort is so important. You pay for it if you get it wrong. We saw that with Contador. You know, Contador, I think, is probably in good form, but if you just go a little bit into the red on a climb like that, when it's that steep, you really do pay for it. Shall we hear what our colleague and friend and flatmate and all sorts of other things, Daniel Freib, thought of it all? Daniel's out there at the Vuelta. I'll be joining him on Thursday, but he's there. He's sent us in his latest dispatch. Over to you, Daniel.
Good evening, Richard and Lionel. I think it's Richard and Lionel. It could be someone else, because every time I speak to anyone associated with the podcast these days, they tell me that you guys have roped in some new dubious mercenary signing. Could be Rob Hat. Could be anyone. Anyway, I'm in Galicia. I think one of you, Richard or Lionel, is going to join me in a few days. I'm already on the ground, been at the Mirador de Eizaro today. Absolutely spectacular finish. A finish which really illustrates why the Vuelta a España has turned its image around, turned its fortunes around the last few years. Very spectacular from a racing point of view, very, very steep and short and perfect for television. And also from a point of view of the landscape, absolutely sublime and really is showing off, the Vuelta is really showing off Galicia to its best effect. Very beautiful region of Spain, quite a poor region of Spain. The villages themselves are quite grey, quite uninspiring and not particularly affluent. But the landscapes are absolutely superb. The mountains and, of course, the coastline. And the weather isn't particularly good, certainly compared to other parts of Spain, usually. But we've had very good weather over the last couple of days. So the stage win went to Genies. Movistar, very, very strong. Chris Froome did what he always does. He did that yo-yo thing where you think he's in trouble, then he comes back. And Alberto Contador, I think, really demonstrated to everyone today that he's going to be struggling and he's going to face a real uphill battle if he's going to win the Vuelta a España this year. I think Contador's team is quite weak at this Vuelta. We saw that in the team time trial. I think Contador himself doesn't have the resilience and the endurance, certainly, that he had a couple of years ago. I think that he will try to upset the apple cart and he will try to do something certainly unexpected. Probably in the latter half of the race, the kind of thing that he pulled off at Fuente Day in 2012 when he overhauled Perito Rodriguez's advantage. But I just do not see it being enough. And, you know, when you look at Esteban Chavez's performance today, he really symbolises, he epitomises the new guard who I think are slowly edging ahead of Alberto Contador. So not particularly optimistic about Contador's chances. Who else did well today? Well, Fernandez was extremely impressive. 3 years ago, won the Tour de l'Avenir. Hasn't really pulled up any trees since then, but today he looked every bit a successor to Alejandro Valverde, who's still riding incredibly well in his third Grand Tour. So it's all looking pretty mouthwatering, and there are going to be a lot more stages like today's, short, sharp finishes. Again, fantastic for the TV viewer, fantastic for the crowds also that come to the race. I mean, that's another aspect of the Vuelta that's really picked up in the last few years. Cynics would say because of unemployment, widespread or large-scale unemployment in Spain. I don't know whether that's too much of a factor, but certainly there were plenty of people on the final climb today, and again, that's a trend we've seen over the last few years, more people at the side of the road at the Vuelta, which is good to see. Anyway, I'm looking forward to Lionel Richie, Richard and Lionel joining me in Spain one of these days. I'm really trying hard to think of a Lionel Richie song that incorporates some kind of Spanish reference. You know, Fiesta, of course, Fiesta Forever. Come on and sing along. Lionel, Richard, sing along, and I'll see you in a few days.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Yes, thanks very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. And thank you also to our other sponsors, Rafa. Eurosport, of course, broadcasting the race every day. Rob is also doing bits and pieces for Eurosport at the moment. You were busy on Sunday. And today's big winner, as well as Genies, was, of course, Ruben Fernandez, who won the Tour de l'Avenir in 2013. The Tour of the Future, so-called. It's going on at the moment, and it's being broadcast later in the week on Eurosport, Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, we have two stages broadcast at Tour de l'Avenir. I'll be in the commentary box, and we'll be open, as you said, to discover riders of the future. It's changed a little in the last few years, and we've got professional riders in there now, so there will be riders that you know, riders that you've seen in professional teams out there, and it should be a really exciting race.
But it is a race, you know, the Vuelta field is packed with former stars of the Tour de l'Avenir, Esteban Chavez, Nairo Quintana, and it has thankfully gone back to a sort of era whereby it does genuinely seem to showcase the talents that will emerge on the world stage in the next couple of years. And that for a long time that didn't happen in the 90s and early 2000s, and we suspect that the systematic doping was part of the issue there, but it genuinely seems now to showcase the guys who will be winning on this level.
What better example than Rubén Fernández? He's from Churra in Murcia, which is the same region as Alejandro Valverde. He exploded onto the scene in 2013 at that Tour de l'Avenir. He beat then the brilliant British talents of Simon and Adam Yates, other riders who were at the Grand Tours as well this year. But I know that Julian Alaphilippe had a very good Tour de l'Avenir that year as well. And the Italian promise as well, Davide Formolo. He's since come onto the scene. We've seen him at the Giro d'Italia as well. He's in this race too. He's currently 17th overall at 1 minute and 50 from the lead of Rubén Fernández. So making that transition from amateur to professional and learning how to be in a jersey, learning how to race with all the spotlight on you. It's done by national teams, of course, now, and competed against guys that you hopefully, as you move into the professional scene, are going to be against for the next 10 to 15 years is also a really interesting experience as well.
Absolutely. Any other riders' incidents catch your eye today? Rob, you mentioned in your roundup Miguel Angel Lopez, winner of the Tour of Switzerland, somebody who was a great deal was expected of, another great young talent, but he had a nasty crash, seemed to land on his face at first. It looked like he might have had a collarbone problem, but he got back up and he finished, but well down.
Yeah, a bit of a nightmare for Astana, because they've come into this World d'Espagne, all of their hopes pinned on him. No Fabio Aru, defending champion, didn't turn up, despite the fact that he's only concentrated. He hasn't ridden much at all this year, Fabio Aru. Yes, he was at the Tour de France, the Olympic Games. Nothing after that. I would have sort of expected him to come here as defending champion and at least ride around Spain. He's not been picked. Miguel Angel Lopez is the man. He's crashed on stage three. He's lost far too much time. And they're in the bizarre situation of having to turn back the clock, really, now. And they're looking to the man who's 20th overall, Michele Scarponi, at 2 minutes and 3 seconds. And for all he might be a laugh and a real comedy character, Scarponi's not going to win the World Tour, is he, this year? So Astana, for the second Grand Tour in succession, as one of the big moneyed super teams, are going to be in... they're going to be forced to chase stages, I think.
Peter Kennock, a good ride, I thought. Former red jersey wearer, of course, wore it for one day, and he's still seventh at 47 seconds.
Well, the two big teams, Movistar, four riders in the top 10, Sky, three riders in the top 10, all powerful. All right, a lot of that is to do with the fact that the team time trial was so good on the opening day. Remember, both of them split by just a fraction of a second to take the win. Sky just pipping the Spaniards to the post. But they've had to get through all the chaos yesterday, the crash towards the line, and they've also had to get up the mountain today. So I think the cream is rising very, very quickly to the top in this World d'Espagne. Fernandez, Valverde, Moreno and Quintana all in the top 10 for Movistar. Froome, Kenyuk and Koenig all in the top 10 for Team Sky, and the top 10 separated by 1 minute and 1 second.
Compared to the Tour, remember how close it all was. Yeah. It's already gaps opening up. Simon Yates, 11th, that's the sort of finish I might have expected a little bit better.
Yeah, certainly with everybody working for Esteban Chavez, I'm pretty sure that they would have wanted to keep Simon Yates as high up as possible alongside Esteban Chavez. Given the fact, too, that this is Chavez's second Grand Tour of the season, all right, he's had a break since the Giro d'Italia where he was so good, but it's asking a lot for GC riders to peak for two Grand Tours in a season. And Simon Yates has been on such good form since he came back from his suspension, but he's still 11th at 1 minute and 23. He's still ahead of Alberto Contador, let's not forget, at 1 minute and 31, who already, looking around at his team, was probably thinking, I'm not in a great position here. He's probably thinking now, I'm in an even worse position at 12th. And what do you think for Contador? Because when he's had these setbacks in the past, I've always been very wary of him. A setback like at the Tour de France, you'd have thought, well, it's Contador, isn't it? It's never going to be as bad as he's making it out to be. He's going to go off, train hard, come back and absolutely rinse everybody. He's going to murder everybody in the World d'Espagne. And I sort of thought that might happen here. He obviously didn't turn up with the team he wanted. At 1 minute and 31, what do you reckon he can do?
The problem with Contador, it's a double-edged sword, because it's a problem and also the thing that makes him a great rider. He is a racer. And when a move goes, when somebody presses home the advantage, as Movistar did today, especially with Fernandez, he'll follow it. He's not calculating in the way that Froome is, that Froome pays attention to his own body. You know, he's riding according to the pace that he knows he's capable of sustaining on the climb. It's all very measured and very calculated. And Contador, you know, he's a gambler. He takes risks. Occasionally his body will, or his mind will, cash checks that his body can't pay, so to speak. And it's what makes him a great, exciting rider. But, of course, as age creeps up on him, he heads into his 30s and his physical strength is declining. He has to ride a bit more with his head, and I don't think he did ride with his head today. I think he went with that move because that's what Contador does.
Yeah, and Contador's problem this season in particular, whichever race you've seen him in, he's always been playing catch-up, apart from the Tour of the Basque Country, maybe. He has always been playing catch-up. Think right back to Paris-Nice when Geraint Thomas was ahead. The last day he was forced to produce that wonderful ride. And the reason we all love watching him, because it was a spectacular day's bike riding, thanks to Alberto Contador, but it didn't produce the win. He was always good at producing the win and entertaining previously. At the minute, he's still managing to entertain us, but he isn't producing the goods at the end of it. Now, he knows this climb as well. He should have known what's coming because he was racing in 2012. The time gaps today, really interesting, were quite a bit bigger than they were in 2012. Purito, Joaquim Rodriguez, just retired, of course. He won on the day, and he was only 7 seconds ahead of Alberto Contador then. So Contador got up that day without any problem. Third was Valverde at 13 seconds. Hazink at 19 seconds fourth. Froome on that day finished fifth at 22. Today, you saw the race blown apart. All right, we had a breakaway win. It was slightly different. But Contador losing 28 seconds. Perhaps should have, as you say, if he knew he wasn't in the form of his life, should have managed it a bit better. But again, very, very easy to speak after the horse already bolted, isn't it?
Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our sponsors. And we are at the Rafa Cycle Club in Spitalfields in East London. And it was here in June, I think it was. It's hard to remember now, that I did an event with Joe Dombrowski. We released that today as a special little extra podcast. Joe is riding the Vuelta, his second Grand Tour of the year. It was a fascinating conversation with Joe, very wide-ranging. He reveals all kinds of things about his career, about coming to Europe and racing, about his troubled time with Team Sky, about an hour and 17 minutes of conversation, so it's quite a long listen, but well worth it. He also talks about his dream teammates. If he was to line up in a Grand Tour, who would he most like to have at his side? That's really interesting. He also reveals what makes Vasyl Kiryienka collapse with laughter. He was sharing a room with Kiryienka one night, and Kiryienka was watching something on his computer, just laughing, doubled up laughing, and eventually Dombrowski sort of crept over and check what he was watching, and the result, what he discovered surprised him, Rob. It surprised him.
It wasn't Only Fools and Horses, was it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Speaking of Only Fools and Horses, if there's a bit of 80s music kind of seeping in here, it's because we're surrounded by some lovely 80s music. Not Whitney Houston, as we had the other night, but...
It's weird, I expected more tattoos and beer stalkers around here.
Very 80s, isn't it? Anyway, let's... I don't think we've got too much else in terms of wrapping up today's stage.
No, I'm just glad that we could actually watch it in here and not having to get up the 30% of a gradient to the top today. I mean, if you didn't manage to see the stage... and you weren't watching Eurosport, as you should have been doing. Just imagine, this was the sort of climb that when you're driving up it to the finish, you see people not just zigzagging on their bikes, but zigzagging up the climb, walking with their bikes. It is so steep, so ridiculous, that you'd be out of breath even walking up it. It was hellish out there today. All right, it's only short, 1.8 kilometres, but I doubt there's a steeper climb on a Grand Tour in the world.
Couple of other bits of housekeeping, actually. We were talking about Alberto Contador earlier. Our next friend special is El Pistolero, The Many Lives of Alberto Contador. It's been put back a little bit just because we're making it better. That's the reason. And that'll come out the week after the Vuelta finishes. So it'll include, obviously, how Contador gets on at this Vuelta and perhaps ask the question whether he's won his last Grand Tour. Who knows? He might go through this year without winning a Grand Tour, which is extremely unusual for him. But The Many Lives of Alberto Contador will feature lots of interviews with lots of the people close to Contador, and that will come out about a week or so after the Vuelta finishes. In late October, we'll have 2020 Vision, which is a look ahead into what cycling will look like in the future. And finally, in early December, we'll have Full Circle, Bradley Wiggins, and that will be the Wiggins story. Encompassing his whole career, his legacy, and we'll be anchoring that from the Ghent 6, which will be his farewell race. So there should be lots of really good stuff in that. But you can become a friend of the podcast at thiscyclingpodcast.com for £10. There have been eight specials already released this year, and thank you very much to everybody who has signed up. You help us to cover races, and I'm off to the Vuelta later this week. Lionel will be going the following week. Daniel's there at the moment, of course, and we'll be joining up with him once we're out there.
Well, before we go, it's probably right we talk about the stage winner. Of course, with all the GC action, it's easy to gloss over what happened. But Alexandre Genier is 28 years of age. He's been an unlucky rider, really. He's always been quite talented. The good news is the pressure was off before this Vuelta because he'd already signed for Agir d'Azur Mondial. He's currently at Français des Jeux. Remember, he had to climb off the Giro d'Italia this year, previous top 10 finisher there, on just stage 4. He also got in trouble for fighting as well, let's not forget. But he was absolutely brilliant on the road from the breakaway. Just stage 3. Think to Grand Tours, it's not easy. The first uphill finish of a Grand Tour for a breakaway to go and do something. And it was fantastic the way he kept it out, timed his attack just right. Of course, helps that he does have that security of a contract for the next two seasons. And it's his second welter win. He won a stage in 2013. And think that the Tour de l'Ain last week is the only race he'd managed to finish since the Giro d'Italia. It's nothing short of a remarkable comeback.
He rode well at Tour de l'Ain, though, didn't he? Sixth overall, I think, when I looked really it up well, earlier. Really yeah. Well. So, yeah, as a good rider. Daniel Freeb called it, of course, on the road, well before the finishing climb. It was really interesting. I mentioned it earlier, just see how that lead evaporated, more or less, on the climb. You know, the old 10-kilometre rule on the flat is that a break loses about a minute every 10 kilometres. On a climb like that, it was close to being a minute in a kilometre.
Yeah, it was hard because we were watching it and thinking, hang on a minute, what is the equation here? How do we work this? And we've got to give credit to Sean and Carlton, really, for calling it right on the telly, because they were convinced up to the last kilometre that he had it, that he had it, that he had it. And it didn't always look that way until the end. So well done to them, and more importantly, well done to Genies for hanging on. And he made the calculation, as our esteemed colleague Sean Kelly would say.
He did indeed. Right, let's wrap things up there. The only final bit of housekeeping I want to mention is our fabulous Spanish music. We've gone with an Italian theme for the Giro, a French theme for the Tour, and our band supplying the music for the Vuelta is Más y Más.
Más y Más? I've not heard of them. I must have a listen.
They're very good. It's a very nice, very atmospheric, very evocative sound it gives us at the start of the episode and throughout the episodes. Thank you very much to them for letting us use their music. So I think that's all for today. We keep these Vuelta dispatches short and sweet. Thank you very much, Rob, for filling Lionel's shoes so ably.
Thank you.